Now we are holding on your Dalet Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom, so the second line of the Gemara. The Mishnah had described that you had there was a system in the Beis Mikdash involving chosamos, involving stamped pieces of paper or parchment or whatever, vouchers essentially. If a person needed nesachim for their korbanos, rather than that they should have to be expected to bring nesachim from their own house, where, after all, nesachim, the flour, the wine, the oil, have to be prepared according to very, very stringent criteria. They have to be prepared al taras hakodesh, as if they were kodshim, even though when they're being prepared, they're still cholin. The average person might not be able to do that. So the Beis HaMikdash had an office. We had two offices in connection with this. One, and we listed in the first mission of the Perek, the two officials that were in charge of those respective offices. You had Yochanan ben Pinchas was in charge of the chosamos, of the stamps. So what you would do is you would go to Yochanan with the amount of money you need for the nesachim for your korban. You'd give him the money. He would give you a stamped voucher, stamped with one of the four, according to the Tanakhama, four, according to Abishol, five kinds of Nesachim vouchers that were available. Then you would take that voucher, you would go to the other guy, Achia, who actually hands out the Nesachim, and you'd give him the voucher, and he would give you the Nesachim, and then in the evening, Yochanan and Achia would get together and square accounts. And why they did it that way instead of just having one person handle the transaction and give out Nesachim, none of them, before Hashem, say, but preposterous it would work more smoothly that way. Like this, you have one person is responsible for pouring out the Nesachim and being the cashier and taking the money, it would get too hard for him. And also this way you have a cross-check by comparing the number of chosamos and the amount of money and make sure that it matches up. Now, so the Mishnah had said, according to the Tanakhama, there were four kinds of stamps. The fourth one is for a mitzvah. According to Abishol, he says there were two types for a mitzvah, one for a rich mitzvah and one for a poor mitzvah, because a rich mitzvah brings three animals with their nesachim plus an extra log of oil. And the poor person brings two birds, which don't need nesachim, one animal, which does, and one log of oil. So Abishol says you needed a separate stamp for him, whereas the Chacham said, no, he could just use one of the regular stamps, one of the regular vouchers, and the log of oil he would just bring from his house. Okay. So the Mishnah mentioned the first three were for three kinds of animals, because the Torah tells us that there's a section in Parshas Shlach where the Torah tells us about the Nesachim for Korbanos. Generally, it's only an Ola and a Shlomim that require Nesachim. In the case of Mitzora, you have the rarity that is Chatas and Asham require Nesachim as well, but ordinarily it's only an Ola and a Shlomim. And the Torah describes over there, if you're bringing a bull or cattle as a Korban, then you need three esroinim of flour, six logim of oil mixed with it, and six logim of wine, and all of that is poured and offered respectively on the mizbeach. In the case of a ram, an adult male sheep, you need two esroinim of flour, four logim of oil, and four logim of wine. And in the case of a young sheep or a goat, then you need one esroin of flour, three logim of oil, and three logim of wine. So they had three different kinds. So therefore, three different types of vouchers. So now the Gemara discusses your Dalet Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. Niske Rochel Ma. What are the Nesachim for an adult female sheep? The point of the question is, in other words, like this: the Torah tells us, and we said in the Mishnah, that you have a different kind of Nesachim for a ram, which is an adult male sheep. So the question is there similarly? So we see, in other words, there's a difference between a baby sheep, which is below a year old, versus an adult male sheep above 13 months old. In between, by the way, that 13th month, the animal is called a palgus or pilgus or whatever it's pronounced. And the Gemara discusses in a couple of places what exactly you do with it, what kind of nesachim it has. A person is not yotze a korban with that, though, so you can bring it as a korban and it'll be a kosher korban. But if a person made a neder, I'm going to bring a sheep, he's not yotze with a palgus, and if he makes a neder, then I'm going to bring a ram, he's also not yotze with it. And korbanos that have to be one or the other, you're not yotze during that 13 months. It's in limbo. Anyway, the point is that we see that there's a difference when it comes to male sheep between babies and adults. So is there a similar difference with females? So the Gemara says, "Min mad tenenon." Well, given that we said in the Mishnah, "Gdi mishamish nisket soin gdolim uktanim schorim unakevus," since the Mishnah said that the stamp marked "Gdi" was used to provide vouchers for people who need nesachim for sheep, whether adult or whether adult or young, whether male or female. Hadar Amri, that means niske rochel kniske gdi. That tells us, therefore, that the nesachim for an adult male sheep are the same as for a young sheep or for a young goat, which is one isarin, three logim, not the larger amount like you would have for a ram. Only a ram, among sheep, only a ram, an adult male sheep, is the exception that it gets larger nesachim. So the Gemara says, Dichtiv, and we know this because the Pasuk says, in that section of Nesachim, in Parashas Shlach, after it lists the individual Nesachim for each of the three types of animals, it says, Kocha ye'osa la'shur ha'echad, this is, like this should be done for each shur, or la'ayil ha'echad, or for each ayil, or for each ram, or la'seb akvasim o'ba'izim, or for a seh, for a sheep among the for a seh, which is a generic term for a young for a sheep or a goat. So for the seh among the kvasim, the sheep, oibaizim, or the gate or the goats. So we have to ask, why is that pasuk there? Once it lists in the previous psukim that you have X amount for a bull, and X amount for an ayil, and X amount for a kevesh. Why for a keves? Why does the pasuk need to? Why does the Torah need to give this extra pasuk? Kocha ye'osa. What is it teaching us? So it's like this: Lasher ha'echad lama nemar. Why does it say Lasher ha'echad for each shur? Magid. It teaches us shalechilik ben niske egel niske shur, that there's no distinction between the nesachim of a calf of a baby cow than there is to an adult one. And we need the Torah to tell us that, Shahoya Badin. Otherwise, we would have thought to make a Mamatsinu, to make a Binyan Av as follows. Ben Hatsoin to Nesachim, or Ben Abokor to Nesachim. We find that a young sheep requires Nesachim. We also find that a young cow, that a young bull, whatever, young cattle, requires Nesachim. So we would think, Im Matsonu Shechilik Ben Niske Keves to Niske Ayo, the same way as there is a distinction between the Nesachim of a young sheep, of a young male sheep, and the nesachim of an adult male sheep. L'chach nachlek ben niske egel and niske shur. So we would think in the same way, there should be a distinction between the nesachim of a calf and of a full grown bull. No, Talmud Lama Kocha Ye'osa la'shur ha'echad. Therefore, no, the pasuk tells us this is what should be done for one shur. Now, how does that tell us? First of all, so Korban Eda and Tiklan Chazdin explain in turn based on Rashi and Tosfos, respectively, in Menachos. Number one is because the Gemara tells us elsewhere that the word shur can be used even of a baby animal, even a baby cow or bull on the day it's born can already be called a shur. So therefore, so that means what it says over here, Lashur Ha'echad, means for that. Also, there's the fact that it says shur ha'echad. It's all the same, regardless of the age of the shur. Either way, the nesachim are all the same. Magid. So this teaches us shalechilik ben niske egel leniske shur, that the Torah does not differentiate between the nesachim of a calf and the nesachim of a full-grown bull. So therefore, so one of the stamps that they had that Yochanan would provide people was labeled Egel, a calf, and it meant for any age of cattle, whether it's a calf, whether it's a full-grown animal, whether it's a male or a female. Next, the pasuk continues, Oila Ayil, or for a ram, again, Lama Nemar. Why does the pasuk need to mention that point? So again, Shahoya Badin, because without those words, you would think, logically like this, Im Matsana Shechilik ben Niske ben Shana leniske ben Shnasayim. We find the Torah differentiates between the Nesachim for a male sheep within its first year versus within its second year. That one has the Nesachim of a sheep and the other has the Nesachim of a ram. L'chach nachlek ben Niske Shnasayim leniske Shalish. Maybe there's a further distinction within a ram itself between when it's in its second year versus when it's in its third year. Talmud Lema, Oila Ayil, therefore, to tell us not. The Torah tells us, Oila Ayil Ha'echad, or for one ram, meaning the rams are all the same, regardless. Once it's a ram, then it's nesachim are always the same thing. The pasuk then continues, Ola seba kvasim lomanemar, or for a se among the sheep. Why does it mention that? So again, shahoya badin, because otherwise we would have thought to say, im matzana shechilek ben niske keves to niske ayil, just like the Torah differentiates between the nesachim for a baby male sheep and an adult male sheep, which is a ram, l'chach nachlek ben niske kispa l'niske rochel, so we'd think the same thing with the females, there's a distinction between the nesachim of a baby female sheep and an adult female sheep. No, Talmud Loma, Ula Seba Kvasim. Therefore, the Torah tells us that the Nesachim are the same for any se among the Kvasim, among the sheep. Next, Oiba Izim Loma Nemar. Then why does it say, or among the goats? Again, Shahoya Badin, because otherwise we would have thought, Im Matsona Shechilik Ben Niske Keves La Niske Ayil. We see the Torah differentiates between the Nesachim of a baby male sheep and an adult male sheep. L'chach Nachlek Ben Niske Gdi La Niske Tayish. So we would think that by goats, you should have a similar kind of thing, and there should be a difference between the Nesachim of a baby male goat and an adult male goat. No, Talmud Loma, Oiba Izim. No, therefore the Torah tells us, or among the goats, meaning hikish, cotton, shabbat ism, the god or shabbat yashim. So the Torah is comparing the tiniest little baby goat to the biggest tayish, to the biggest adult goat. Ma zebish, shloshes lugin, af zebish, shloshes lugin, just like the baby gets only three lugim of wine and three of oil, and he saw it in a flower, so also the adult does. So the bottom line is, therefore, all cattle get the same nesachim, three esroinim of flour, six lugim each of wine and oil. All goats get the same amount, one esroin of flour, three lugim of wine, three lugim of oil. All female sheep get the same amount, three lugim and three lugim. All baby male sheep also get that same amount. The only exception is an adult male sheep, a ram, which gets two esroinim and four lugim and four lugim. So therefore, so they had the three types of stamps, the three types of vouchers in the Beis Hamikdash reflected those three. You had one labeled egel, which means a calf for all kinds of cattle. Another one labeled D, which means a young animal or a goat. So that served for all goats as well as all young female sheep. And then there was one labeled Zohar, which means a ram, or Dchar in Aramaic, according to Ben Azai, which means a ram. And that was unique for a ram, which gets two, four, and four. The Mishnah had said Veshema Yom Kosov Cholo. The Mishnah had said that the date was that the name of the day, which for Pashtus means the day of the week, was written on the vouchers in order that people don't use them to cheat. Because there's two possibilities. Number one, if you don't have a date on it, you could have one person loses their voucher and another person finds it and decides to hold on to it, and I'll use it tomorrow and I can get my nesachim for free. So we don't want that. So therefore, it's stamped with the day. Another point is also a person might say, you know what, I'll buy the voucher now when prices are low, and I'll hold on to it when prices, as a hedge against when prices go up. And then when I need a korban, I'll be able to get nesachim at the current lower price. So therefore, they were labeled with the day. So the Gemara asked, what good does that do to put the day of the week? Imagine that all he has to do is match that day of the week. So there's a voucher that's stamped Sunday. All the guy has to do, all this Ramai has to do, is wait till next Sunday and he can turn it in. So Gemara says that they didn't do that. Shem Mishmar, how your cost of all of them. They didn't just write the day of the week. They wrote the name of the Mishmar as well. There were 24 Mishmaris, and each one served in the Beis Hamikdash for 1 week. So they use the name of the Mishmaris to identify the week, like we use the name of the parasha, let's say, to identify the week. So therefore, they would write on it, Sunday of the Mishmar of Yar Yariv, Sunday of the Mishmar of whoever, and that way it's only going to be 24 weeks later that it's going to be usable again. The Gemara says, okay, Hagabat Machashazia goes to Mishmar. Fine. So all the guy has to do, imagine, is he just has to wait until that Mishmar is on duty again. He just has to wait 24 weeks, another 6 months. That's not too long to hold on to a voucher. The Gemara says, no. Shame Hayyim, Shame Shabbos, Shame Chodesh, Hayakosav Aleihem. They didn't just write out the day of the week and the name of the Mishmar. They also wrote the name of the month on it. So they would write Sunday, they would write, let's say, And they would write, let's say, a Sunday of the Mishma of Yehoyariv during the month of Nisan, let's say. Afilu roitzel azayig ein motzel azayig. So even if you want to match it up, it's going to be very hard to, because it's only going to be many years later that it's going to match up again like that, where Yehoyariv is going to happen to be during a week, during Chodesh Nisan, and by that time, it's not going to be worth it to hold on. It's not going to be worth it to hold on to the voucher for that long in case it happens again, and then you'll be able to do this. So then that way, that'll avoid that people will use it for trickery like that. An interesting point in that connection, actually, there's a bit of discussion about how it worked with the Mishmaris. Did they start the cycle every year again on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or was it just continuous, and after the 24th Mishmar, always the next week, the first Mishmar? From our Gemara, it sounds like the second way, because otherwise every year you're going to have that Yehoyariv is going to be doing Nisan and so forth. Okay. The Mishnah says, there were two chambers in the Beis Hamikdash. Now, there were many chambers in the Beis Hamikdash. We're talking about over here two chambers where they stored valuable objects. And besides, I mean, again, you had the chamber where they kept the Matzah Shekel, but here we're focusing on two particular chambers that they had in the Beis Hamikdash. Achas Lishkas Chashoyin, one was the chamber of the discreet, of the people who do things in secret, as we're going to say in a second. Va'achas Lishkas HaKelim, and the other one was the Lishka of the vessels. Lishkas Chashoyin, the purpose of the Lishka of the Chashoyin, of the discreet, was Yirei Chet Noistin L'Seicha B'Chashai, people who fear Aveiro, who are very, very, who want to keep mitzvahs in the best possible way, would put money into that chamber secretly, so nobody knows who put in. V'anim b'nei tovim mispanesin mitocha b'chashoy, and poor people from good families, meaning these are people who, they didn't grow up poor, so it's not like they grew up knowing what it's like to take tzedakah. They're not so embarrassed to take. We're talking about, let's say, people from more prominent families who became poor, and now it's highly embarrassing for them to even be taking tzedakah at all. So therefore, they would be able to take discreetly from this chamber and support themselves, which this kind of thing, that Amam lists it as the second highest level of tzedakah, that Amam, the highest level of tzedakah, that Amam describes as helping somebody get a job, or for example, lending them money in order to start a business or whatever. But the second highest is where you don't know who you're giving to, and the person who received it doesn't know who he received it from. That way, there's as little as possible embarrassment to the poor person. So here, it's actually kind of beyond that. So the Rambam describes that an example of that is the Lishkas Chashoyim. This is actually a little bit beyond that, because here, the poor person knows he's receiving tzedakah, but nobody else knows he is. We're going to have an example in the Gemara where somebody gives tzedakah in a way where the poor person doesn't even know that he's receiving tzedakah at all. That's something else. Anyway, so that was the Lishkas Chashoyim, was for that purpose. Lishkas HaKelim, then the Lishka of the vessels, was Kol Mishu Misnadiv Kli. If a person donated a vessel or a utensil or a tool or something to the Beis Hamikdash, Zoker LaSeicha, he would throw it into that chamber. Va'achas L'Shloshim Yom HaGizbarin Poschenoisa. Once every 30 days, the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash would open up that room, and they would look over what's in there. V'chol kli shemotza b'tzorech lebedek habayis, any vessel or any utensil or tool that they could use directly for bedek habayis. Let's say somebody donated a hammer. They could use the hammer for repairing, for making repairs and construction in the Beis Hamikdash. So then they would keep that. So manichim, so they would leave it and they would use it for bedek habayis. V'ashar, anything else that they found that somebody donated, nimkorin, they would sell them, udmein neuflin lelishkas lebedek habayis, and then the money would go towards the chamber where they use money that's earmarked for the repair and the upkeep of the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so since we're talking about since we're talking in the Mishnah about the Lishkas Chashoyim, where they would give tzedakah in secret, and the Aniyim would take tzedakah from it in secret, so now the Gemara goes into a little bit of agada about tzedakah. The Gemara starts off, Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi and Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'Nachman Havon Parnosim. These two, Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi and Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'Nachman, were Gaboy tzedakah. They were responsible for collecting and distributing tzedakah to the poor people. V'havon Yavin L'Rab Choma Avoid Rabbi Yehoshaya Dinner. They would give a dinner or some other amount of money to Rab Choma, the father of Rabbi Hoshaya, who Yohiv Leila Chironin, and he in turn would give that dinner to other people, because you had some poor people who are embarrassed to be taking tzedakah from the Gabite tzedakah at all. So like this, they used Rab Choma as a go-between. Rav Chama would go and give them the money, it's not obvious to them, therefore, that it's coming from tzedakah. As far as they knew, Rav Chama is giving it to them personally. So therefore, so it wasn't so embarrassing for them. So now, the Rambam lists that as a slightly lesser level of tzedakah. But the fact of the matter is, it's actually a much lesser level, but I'm listing that as like the fourth or fifth level of tzedakah, because after all, I mean, they know that they're receiving from Rav Chama. Rav Chama knows he's giving to them, so there is a certain degree of embarrassment from the poor person. On the other hand, the advantage of it is that the poor person doesn't realize that what he received is actually from the collection of tzedakah that was done in the neighborhood. As far as they know, it's just Rav Chama giving them personally. Similarly, Rabbi Zechariah chasnid Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Zechariah, the son-in-law of Rabbi Levi, hoyu akol melizin olav, throughout his life, everybody was always saying, was always spreading rumors about him and talking about how badly he's doing. Amrim, they said, deloit sarich, he doesn't need tzedakah, for who nasiv, and yet he's taking tzedakah, how could he do that? Min de damach, after he passed away, Bodkin va'ashkachin to have a mefalag le'lecharonin, they checked into it and they found that all the tzedakah that he had taken wasn't for himself. He had taken it only in order to distribute it to other aniyim, like we said Rav Chama did. So in Rav Chama's case, the gaboy tzedakah knew about it, so there were no rumors. In Rav Zechariah's case, he did it on his own. So nobody knew, but once he passed away, they discovered the secret. Al derech, like you have the famous story with the miser in the times of Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchever, where even though everybody thought that he was a miser, really he was a tremendous baal tzedakah, and there were different. There's the three dinei Torah that involved him giving tzedakah, and other similar stories to that. So here you have something similar. Another story involving tzedakah. Rav Chinen Abba Papa have a mefalig mitzvah b'leilya. Rav Chinen Abba Papa used to distribute tzedakah at night. The reason why he did it at night was, again, in order not to embarrass the aniyim. You have similarly in the Bavli in Ksubas, you have the famous story over there of Ma'ukva, who used to every night or every week before Shabbos, whatever it is, would go and give a certain poor person in his neighborhood, would drop off some money by his door in order that the guy then discovers it in the morning and he's not embarrassed. And then one time the guy tries to find out who it is that's giving him, and Ma'ukva and his wife ran and hid in the oven. We know the story. Anyway, so Rav Chinen Abba Papa is doing the same kind of thing. He's distributing tzedakah at night in order that the people aren't embarrassed. By the way, in the Yerushalmi, throughout the Yerushalmi, the word mitzvah, unspecified, means tzedakah. The Alter Rebbe talks about it in Tanya, in Perek Lamed Zayin, and he says the reason is because every other mitzvah you do with some part of your body or some part of what you have. You daven using your mouth. You take lulav and esrog using your hands, etc. Only tzedakah is the mitzvah in the sense that it affects everything that you do. You put your whole mitzvah into earning that money, and you could have used that money to feed yourself and then your whole body, and instead you're taking that money and giving it to tzedakah. So therefore, therefore it's called mitzvah unspecified, like the mitzvah in the Yerushalmi. Anyway, so he was doing that. He was giving out tzedakah at night. Chad zman pogabe rabba in Yeruchaya. One time the head of the Shadim met up with him. And as we learned in Psachim and in other places, nighttime is usually the time when Shadim are around and about. Amalei, so the shed tells him, Loikein Alfan Rebbe, didn't Rebbe, meaning you teach yourself, teach us. The Pasuk says, Loi Sasid Gvor Reacha, don't encroach on your neighbor's boundary. In other words, like, this is my time to be around. In fact, the Gemara tells us in some places that a Talmid Chacham is not allowed to go out alone at night. So you're not supposed to be going out now. Amalei, sort of Chinen Abba Papa answered, sure, but Veloiken Ksiv Matan Basesi Yichba'af, but doesn't the Pasuk also say that a gift in secret, meaning tzedakah given in secret in order not to embarrass the person who receives it, Yichba'af will overcome the anger of Hashem, so therefore you, Shadim, have no right to interfere with that, just the opposite, then you're interfering with me. Bahava Mistifemine, so the shed was afraid of him, V'orak Min Koimoi, and he ran away from. So in this case, Rav Chinen Abba Papa was doing right to give out tzedakah at night. With that said, it does say in Sfarim that when there's not an overarching reason to give at night, for example, let's say you're just putting money in the pushka, you could just as well do that during the day rather than at night. You're not gaining anything by doing it at night. So then it's brought in Sfarim that then in fact, other things being equal, you shouldn't give tzedakah at night based on this Gemara over here. Obviously, when you have an actual poor person there, or if you have a different reason that there's a particular need to give tzedakah at night, then you go ahead and do that and you ignore that. But other things being equal, if you have tzedakah that you could have just as well put in the pushka by day and instead you're choosing to do it by night, then better not to do that based on this Gemara. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yonah, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ashrei Maskil Adol, happy is the person who knows intelligently how to deal with the poor person. So Rabbi Yonah points out, Ashrei Noisin Ladol Ein Ksiv Kan, the Pasuk knows to say happy is the person who gives to the poor person. Ela Ashrei Maskil Adol, that happy is the person who thinks and uses a seichel how best to do good for the poor person. Which means, that he considers carefully how to best do the mitzvah in the way that it'll benefit the poor person most. So how would Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonah do things? So here was an example. If he saw a poor person who originally came from a well-to-do family and now had lost his possessions and now is poor, so he knows the guy is going to be terribly embarrassed to take tzedakah. So he doesn't want to give him tzedakah outright. So he would tell him, Bni, my son, I've heard that you have a Yerusha coming to you from someplace else. So you're going to be coming into money soon. Toil. So meanwhile, take this money from me, and later on you'll be able to pay it back. In other words, he's offering it to him as a loan. Minda have a nosiv, after the guy would take the money, have a omale, then Rabbi Yechanan or Rabbi Yonah would tell him, Matana hilach, it's a present to you, you don't have to pay it back. So therefore, so in that way, he avoided the poor person being embarrassed. Now, actually, Tiklan Chadatin explains he wasn't really lying when he said you're going to have a Yerusha from someplace else. The fact of the matter is, a person has a Yerusha. Either he has it from his ancestors, that his ancestors left him money, or in this case, his Yerusha comes from someplace else, namely that he's going to be supported by other people. But, and what is he, so he's saying, you have a Yerusha from someplace else, there's a truth to it in that it means, in other words, you have either ancestors who left you money, or if you don't, then you have fellow Jews who will give you money. As the Rambam writes in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, in this connection, all Jews are brothers, and a brother has Rachmanos on his brother. When he says, take it and you'll pay me back, also he's not lying. What he means is, like the modern expression, pay it forward, you're going to be paying eventually to other poor people because you in turn are going to be giving tzedakah to them eventually. After all, even a poor person himself is required to give tzedakah of the little amount he has. And in fact, Rabbi Yonah is saying, we know wealth and poverty is like a cycle. It's like a wheel that turns. You always have some people are going up and some people are going down. So Rabbi Yonah is saying, I myself might have among my very own descendants, there might be poor people. So you pay it forward, you give tzedakah, and that way you'll be better. In that way, it may end up that you actually end up benefiting me after all, because my descendants may be in the position of taking tzedakah. Another example, the Gemara says, Chia Ba'ada said, Is have a seven biyuminun. We had old people in our times. We had old people in our times, poor people. Manda have a yohiv lahoin mi bein reish shatel. So Maramba, if anybody gave them tzedakah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, have a nasvin, they would take tzedakah. But after that, they wouldn't take tzedakah from Yom Kippur for the rest of the year. They wouldn't take tzedakah. Amrin, they said, Deshaton Gabon. What's supposed to be for the year is already by us. Meaning, in other words, they're saying, whatever we need. We know that Hashem determines for the year during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur what a person's parnasa is going to be for the whole year. So during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they had no problem taking tzedakah. Because fine, it hasn't been decided yet what their income is for the year, so they could take. But after Yom Kippur, they figured that everything has already been established, how much we're going to make for the year. So therefore, we don't need to take tzedakah the rest of the year. Hashem will provide it for us in some other way. So deshaton, what belongs to us for all year, gabon is by us. Okay. More on tzedakah. The Gemara says, Nehemiah ish shichin poga bo Yerushalmi echad. Nehemiah ish shichin, once a man from Yerushalayim who was poor met up with him. The man asked Nehemiah, please zechei me, have a schus with me. In other words, give me tzedakah, and you'll have a schus, tarnagot, choda tarnagota, for the amount of money that it costs to buy one chicken. So Nehemiah figured, why is the guy being so extravagant? Chicken costs a lot of money. Amalei, so he tells him, heloch tumise, he tells him, here's some money, dekupad, for meat. Meat in those days, the Talmud of Shmuel Bar Abishneir, one of the Mefarshim on Masechta, that explains, and we find this in a few other places in Shas, that in those days, apparently meat was cheaper than chicken. Nowadays, it's the other way around, but in those days, apparently meat was cheaper than chicken. Another example of that, actually, we have is at the end in Parshas Pinchas, when it describes the korbanos of Sukkos, where each day you had one less par, Rashi brings over there from a Medrash, that it's like when you have a guest, and as the guest stays longer, you feed him cheaper and cheaper food because he's now like more like a member of the household. And it mentions over there in the order, one day you feed him chicken and the next day you feed him meat, implying that meat is less expensive than chicken. So here, Nehemiah was telling the guy, what are you wasting so much money of tzedakah on chicken? Here is some money, go buy some meat instead, which is cheaper. So he went and bought meat and he ate it or miss and he died because he wasn't used to that kind of food. In other words, it turned out the reason he was asking for chicken is not just because he was being extravagant. That was what he had been used to eating back when he was rich. So now when he was poor, that was what he was used to eating, and therefore he felt that he has to continue eating that way. So Nehemiah felt very bad. He was crying out and saying, "Boy over siftu laharuga shall Nehemiah, come and say a hesped and mourn over the person that Nehemiah killed." In other words, he blamed himself. I didn't realize the guy is used to eating chicken and anything else is going to be harmful for him because he's not used to it. And if I had realized that, I would have given him the extra money for chicken. The Bavli tells the story also, but in a somewhat different version, that Nehemiah himself offered to have the guy eat lentils with him. In other words, he wanted to get him used to eating cheaper food. And again, it didn't agree with the guy and he ended up dying. And Nehemiah felt really bad about that. You also have an example over there, the Gemara in Ksubas over there. There's a whole sugya in Ksubas that tells a bunch of stories about tzedakah. The story about Ma'ukva is in there, for example. So it also tells a story of a poor person who comes to Rava saying that every day I eat chicken and drink old wine. And Rava is trying to convince him that, come on, you know, you got to learn to live more simply. And then Bashgacha Pratis, Rava's sister, visited town for the first time in 13 years, and she brought a present for Rava, a chicken and a bottle of wine. So Rava realized, Bashgacha Pratis, obviously Hashem arranged it for this poor person that he should have what to eat, what he's used to, and sure enough, he gave it to him. Okay. Continues the Gemara, another story. This one, the Bavli also tells the story slightly differently in the Gemara in Tainis. Nochum ish gamzu one time was taking some gifts to his father-in-law's house. Tiklan Chadatin brings from the Gemara in Tainis over there, which gives more detail, that he had three donkeys with him, one carrying food, one carrying drinks, and one carrying various kinds of delicacies. Anyway, Poga by Mukash Shchin Echad, he met up with on the way with a person who had shchin, a person who had boils all over his body and was obviously very, very ill. Omalei, so the poor person asks him, Zcheimi mad iskambach, please give me tzedakah out of what you have with you. Now, Nochum Ishkamzu did not realize that how desperate this person was. He thought, okay, he wants tzedakah. Fine, it's not such an emergency. Omalei michsu chazer. So he says, when I return, and when I get back, I'm on my way to my father-in-law's house, out of covet for him, let me go there, and on the way back, I'll give you something. In the version of the Bavli, he tells him, let me untie the bags from the donkeys. Chazer v'ashk chemis, when Nochum ish gamzu came back, he found the guy was dead. Apparently, he was really on his last legs. V'hava omo l'kivle, so Nochum ish gamzu felt really bad about it. So he said, while he's standing in front of the body, he says, Einaya de chaminoch v'lo yisvun loch, the eyes that saw you and didn't want to give you. In other words, I didn't realize. I just, in other words, Tiklan Chadatin explains what happened was over here. He just listened to what the guy was saying. Give me some tzedakah. He didn't realize if he had looked more carefully with his eyes, he would have seen that the guy is on his last legs and he would have given him right away. He wouldn't have waited till he comes back from his father-in-law's, or in the version in the Bavli, he wouldn't have even waited till he unties the bags from the donkey. He would have just reached in and grabbed something to give it to him. So the eyes that didn't take care to look at you, to give you tzedakah, yistamyon, should become blind. Yodid, you're like Pashtun. He continues, the hands that did not stretch out to give you tzedakah, maisim loch, to give you tzedakah, yiskatun, should be cut off. Raglaya, delay ratan, lemitan loch, the feet that didn't run to give you tzedakah, yitabrun, should be broken. And sure enough, all of those things happened to Nochomish Gamzu. He went blind and his hands were amputated and his feet were broken. The Bavli also adds in the story that Nochom still felt, even after all of that, he didn't feel that he had the full onish that he deserved, the full punishment that he deserved. So he said, and I should also be covered with boils like this guy was, and that happened as well. So the Gemara continues, Solik l'gabei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who was a Talmud of Nochum Ish Gamzu, went to visit him. Amale, he says to him, Oili shani roya ois chalakach, woe to me that I have to see you, my Rebbe, in such a terrible condition. Amale, so Nochum Ish Gamzu tells him just the opposite. Oili she'enani roya ois chalakach. Just the opposite. Woe if I didn't see you when I was in this condition. In other words, if I didn't get this happen to me, then I would have to be punished very severely in Olam Haba. Like this, it'll clean up the Saveda of mine, and I'll be able to go into Gan Eden peacefully. Rabbi Akiva misunderstood, or no, actually, Oili she'enani roya ois chalakach, woe to me if I don't see you also suffering Yisorim. Amalei mat makalaleini, so Rabbi Akiva says, what are you cursing me that I should have Yisorim? Amalei, so Nochum tells him just the opposite. Umat mevayit b'yisurim. Why are you protesting against Yisurim? You should realize when the Eibishter sends Yisurim on a person, it's in order to clean up his Averis so that he can have his place in Olam Haba without any trouble. So you should realize that Adarabba, it's a good thing to suffer Yisurim like this. Another story, the Gemara says, since we're talking about appeasing people, since we're talking about making people feel good, like we had these examples of giving tzedakah to people in a way that doesn't embarrass them. So a similar story. Rabbi Hoshia Rabba, have a rabbi debrei chad sagina hoira. Rabbi Hoshia Rabba, his son's rebbe, his son's malamed, was blind. Vahava yolif ochol ime b'chol yoim. Rabbi Hoshaya Rabbah used to make a point every day of eating together with this blind Malamed in order to honor him. Chad zman havalei orchin. One time Rabbi Hoshaya Rabbah had guests, so he didn't come to eat with him. But Pashtus, maybe what it was is, not necessarily do we mean that he would go over to the poor person's house, maybe the other way around. He would invite the poor person to come eat with him, and today he didn't invite him. So the poor person, not the poor person, the blind person, the Malamed, is wondering what's going on. That evening, Rabbi Hoshaya Rabba came to visit him. Amalei, he says to him, Lo yichos mori alai, my master, you should not be angry at me that I didn't invite you earlier today. Begin to have the urchin yomadein. I had guests by my table, by my meal today. De amris, and I figured deloy livzoi be it kora de mori yomadein. I don't want them to embarrass to make light of my master's covered today. In other words, they're not going to realize who you are. They're going to think you're stam some kabtzen, some poor blind person who's sitting at the table. So they're going to treat you. They might have treated you disrespectfully. So therefore, I figured better not to invite you because otherwise they might not treat you with the cover that you deserve. Begin Cain, Loyacholus, Imori, Yemadain. That's why I didn't eat with my master, with you today. Amalei, so the blind man, the Malamed, was very pleased with that. Amalei, he says, Ata piyasta lamanda mischami v'leichomi. You came and appeased, you came and spoke nicely to the one who can be seen but can't see, meaning me, who you can see me but I can't see you. In return for that, midah keneged midah, dechomi v'loy mischamim yikabel piyusach. Hashem, who sees but cannot be seen, should accept your appeasement and give you a bracha. So Rabbi Hoshaya Rabba would like that bracha a lot. Amalei hodam enoloch, he asks the Malamed, where'd you get such a nusach of a bracha from? Amalei me'er Elazar ben Yaakov. He tells him, I got it from a story involving Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov ol chad de sagi nahoda lakarte. One time, a blind poor person came to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's town. Yosef later, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov l'ramine. So when they were sitting at a table or where in shul or wherever, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov made a point of sitting lower down than this person. The point was, the Yemu and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov wanted people to think, the Ilula to have a Barnasha Rabba, unless this guy is a great person, La Yosef later, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Lodamine. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov wouldn't sit below him. The fact that he's sitting lower down than him, he must be a very great, important person. Avdin, they Parnasa Deiko, so they gave him much more tzedakah than usual. Usually, this poor person was wandering from one town to another and he'd get a penny here, a penny there. All of a sudden, he's getting showered with money. So he asked, remember, he's blind, he can't see what's going on. And he asked him, what's going on over here? They told him, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is sitting lower down than you. You must be a very important person. So this blind person reciprocated to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov by giving him a similar tefillah on him. Ata gamalta chesed l'man demischami v'leichami. You did a chesed to someone who can be seen but can't see, meaning me. In return, den dechami v'lemischami yigmo yosa chesed. Hashem, who sees but cannot be seen, should do chesed with you in return for that. So therefore, there's a blind melamed says to Rabbi Hoshea Rabba, so that's what gave me the idea for this bracha, because I'm also blind, so it's appropriate for me as well. Okay. More on the topic of tzedakah. The Gemara says, Dolma, Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Hoshea Rabba, Haivam Matailin, Be'ilin Knishta Delud. Dolma is a Dilma, Dolma, however it's pronounced, is often in the Yerushalmi is an introduction to a story. It means one time it happened, that. Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Hoshea Rabba are walking among the shuls in Lud. You had an area there in Lud where they had a bunch of shuls next door to each other. Amar Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina to Rabbi Hoshea. So Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina is boasting to Rabbi Hoshea, Kama Mamun Shiku Avoyse Kan, look how much money my ancestors put into these shuls over here. Look how nice they are. Amalei, but Rabbi Hoshea tells him, think of it this way: how many neshamas did your ancestors invest in these buildings? In other words, they did the wrong thing by putting so much money into so many different shuls. Better what they should have done. Weren't there in their times poor people who are learning Torah who could use the money for tzedakah instead? Why are they wasting? Not wasting, but why are they putting money towards a lot of shuls, when instead that money could have been going towards a much better purpose for people learning Torah and support poor people who are learning Torah. People who, with Korban Eder explains, because they didn't have enough to live on, they ended up having to stop learning Torah. They ended up having to leave Kollel and start working for a living. And your ancestors could have supported them instead rather than building beautiful shuls. A very, very, very important lesson for us. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rab Avon Ovid Ilan Taraya de Sidra Rabba, Rab Avon paid for big, beautiful gates on the big Beis Medrash, which he figured, you know, Zek Haley Van Beu, you should make mitzvahs as beautiful as possible. And in this case, that means making beautiful doors for the Beis Medrash. Also, Rab Mona Lagabe, but Rab Mona came to Rab Avon, Amale, and Rab Avon is boasting, Chomi my abyss, look what I did, look at these beautiful gates that I made for the Beis Medrash. Amale, so Rab Mona answered him with a lashon of a pasuk, Vayishkach Yisrael, Aseisehu, Vayiven Hecholas. Yisrael forgot the one who made him and built palaces. In context of the pasuk, it's saying that they forgot about Hashem and built palaces for Avodah Zarah. But Rab Mona is telling Rab Avon also, in your case, what it means is that you're building palaces. Yes, a great palace for learning Torah. You're building beautiful doors on it. But again, like Hava B'nei Nash to Yilun Baradaisa, weren't there poor people available whom you could have supported so that they could continue to learn Torah? That's worth much more than putting money towards fancy gates and fancy doors for the Beis Medrash. Okay. So now getting back to the Mishnah had told us that the second chamber, so that was all in connection, that whole piece of Agadah was in connection with the first chamber in The Beis Mikdash called the Lishkas Chashoyim, where we said people would give tzedakah there anonymously, and poor people would take from there anonymously, which is one of the highest levels of tzedakah. Now, the Mishnah had also said that the second chamber over there was called Lishkas HaKelim. People would put tools or utensils in there, and every 30 days, the Gizborim would see what's in there. Anything they needed for Bedek HaBayis would be used directly for Bedek HaBayis, and whatever would not would go to the Bedek HaBayis fund. They would sell it, and the money would go to the Bedek HaBayis fund. So the Gemara says, Tony, in this connection, we learn a Braisa, Kodshe HaMizbeach Motzien Asaroi Lahen Mikodshe Bedek HaBayis. If they run short of money for the Korbanos, then they're able to take money out of the Bedek HaBayis fund. The Bedek HaBayis is a lower level of Kedusha. So if they need korbanos, then they're able to take it out of kodshei bedek habayis. So it doesn't just actually not so much if they're short of money, but for example, korban eda says, let's say a person was makdish an animal to the bedek habayis, which we learned in the previous perek that in that case the animal is supposed to be brought as a korban or sold and the money used for a korban. Or let's say a person donated a stone for bedek habayis, but they need a stone to fix the mizbeach, then they use that. But the other way around, ain't kodshe bedek habayis mitzien asaroi lahen mikodshe mizbeach. But vice versa is not correct, is not true. You can't take out from kodshe mizbeach to use towards bedek habayis. So if you have money that was earmarked for korbanos or for the actual mizbeach itself or whatever, you can't take that money and redirect it to bedek habayis, because that's a lower level of kedusha. You can't go from a higher level of kedusha to a lower level. There's actually a girsa over here that the Vilna Gaon adds a line in the Gemara, and Tikvan Chadatin adds it as well, because he was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, that also, v'loi kodshe bedek habayis mi kodshe bedek habayis. You also can't change one kind of thing from bedek habayis to another thing of bedek habayis. In other words, there's different things within bedek habayis itself, and you can't change them from one level of kedusha to another. So the Gemara asks, v'ha tenenan, So one second, we learned in the Mishnah, we said that if they had a need for a particular keli for the bedek habayis directly, for example, a hammer, manichinoi, so then they leave it, they end up using it for bedek habayis, v'ashanim korin, the rest of the things they sell, udmein noflin lebedek habayis, and the rest of the money goes to bedek habayis. So we see from that, in other words, that we don't set. Now the Mishnah is implying, in other words, that we can take from there to bedek habayis. The implication would also seem to be, on the face of it, that now, first of all, the implication is, it seems we can't take from there to the mizbeach. Otherwise, it should have said udmei noflin lahekdesh or something like that, which would mean bedek habayis or the mizbeach. So that implies you can't take from bedek habayis to the mizbeach. That's one way of understanding what the Gemara is saying. Another way, according to the Vilna Gaon's Hagah, is we see therefore that one kind of bedek habayis can be transformed into a different kind, because this person donated something which he thought could be used for the bedek habayis itself. Let's say he donated a hammer, but the gizborim decide we have enough hammers, we're going to sell this one and we're going to use it to buy something else that we need for bedek habayis, so changing it from one thing to another. How can you do that? The answer is Omer Chizki, a keni masnisin. You have to understand our Mishnah when it says letzorech lolishkas bedek habayis. They put the money into the chamber where they have all the money for the expenses of bedek habayis. In other words, that when we say you can't take one kind of bedek habayis to another, means, for example, to take something that was meant for some other purpose and use it for bedek habayis. But you can put it into the lishka. When you sell it and you then put the money into the lishka, then it's considered like a new thing, and therefore you're allowed to do that. Or according to the other explanation, what it means is you put it in the general bedek habayis fund, and later on, if it should happen that they're running short of money for the korbanos, then they'll be able to take out from that towards the korbanos, because that you're allowed to do. Hadron alach perek Elohei Namun. The next perek is going to continue talking about different things around the Beis Mikdash. Again, since Masechta Shkalim, since the first half of it talked about the Machzor Shekel, so we continue with different details about the Beis Mikdash. And then in the seventh perek, we're going to get a little bit more back to Machzor Shekel. So the Mishnah says, Halacha, Shloisha Asa Shofris, there were 13 pushkas in the Beis Mikdash. They were called shofris, as we're going to see in the Gemara, because they were actually shaped like a shofar. So there were 13 of those. Now, two of those actually were for the Machzah Shekel, and we're going to describe that at the beginning of the next parak. So that's what this is doing over here, because two of these shofaros were for the Machzah Shekel, and the rest of them were for various other funds in the Mishmikdash. They had 13 of them. Also, Shloisha, also Shulchanos. There were 13 tables in different places in the Mishmikdash. And Shloisha, so Shtachavoyas, in 13 places where you bow down, all of those were, there were 13 of each of those things in the Bais HaMikdash. So we're going to describe in later Mishnayos of this parak where all these things were. What were the 13 shofaros? We're going to describe later in the parak what were the 13 shofaros where two of them actually were for Machzah Shekel. And then we're also going to describe where the 13 tables were and where the 13 bowings were. The family of Rav Gamliel and of Rav Chanina Skana Koyanim used to bow in the Bais HaMikdash in 14 places. So the reason why for the 13 would be, there's a couple of reasons. One, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara that there's two reasons. One is because when the Greeks took over the Bais HaMikdash in the years before in the Nes Chanukah, they breached through the Sodig, the low wooden fence around the Bais HaMikdash that was meant as beyond here, Goyim and certain kinds of Tmeim are not allowed to go. So they resented that. So they broke through it in 13 places. Later on, when the Jewish people recaptured the Bais HaMikdash from them, then they refenced those in, but they made that from now on you bow whenever you pass by one of those places to thank Hashem for the ness of saving us from the Greeks. That's one reason. The other reason is going to be mentioned later in the parak, is according to one opinion, there were 13 gates in the Azara. So they would bow when they reached each one of them. So now the family of Rav Gamliel and of Rav Chanan Iskana Koyanim would bow in 14 places. Beheichan Hoisi Yisera, where was the 14th place that they bowed? Kneged Dir Ha'etzim, by the chamber of the wood. You had the four chambers on the corners of the Ezras Nashim. One of them was where they stored the wood for the Mizbeach, and the Koyanim Bale Mumim would check the wood over there to make sure that it's not wormy. So they would bow when they passed by there. Shekin Masodas Yodan Ma'avasein Shesham Ha'odan Nignas, because they had a Masoda that passed down in their families that the Oren was hidden under that place, under the Lishkas Dir Ha'etzim, and therefore they would bow when they passed by there. We're going to learn in the Gemara a few different opinions where the Oren was. This is in the second Bais HaMikdash, of course. In the second Bais HaMikdash, there was no Oren. Continues the Mishnah. It happened once that a particular Kohen was involved with his work, so one meaning is that he was actually involved with his work of peeling the wood, as we're going to say in the Gemara, in order to check whether there are worms in it. Another explanation is Misasik. He was like playing around with his axe that he used for that purpose. He noticed one tile on the floor was different than the others. It was like a different color, as if something had changed in a different color, or it was slightly sticking out compared to the other ones, as if like it had been taken out and not fully reset back in. So he realized the Oren must be underneath there. Now, by the way, what it means is, I mean, this is in the second Bais HaMikdash. The implication is that when the Nebuchadnezzar and his army destroyed the first Bais HaMikdash, they did not destroy the floor. And in fact, there were various places where it says that they didn't even destroy. Some of the walls even remained intact afterwards. So the floor was still intact. Only after the second Bais HaMikdash does it say that Turnus Rufus plowed up the area of the Heichal and the area of the Hanabais, which is why we can't identify anymore where the various parts of the Bais HaMikdash were. But here it was still the same floor from the first Bais HaMikdash. So you notice this tile was different colored or out of place or whatever. Bava Amal HaChaveda, so he comes and tells another fellow Kohen, Loi Hispik Ligmar Sadavach Yotza Nishma. So before he even finished being able to say it, his neshama left him. First of all, because the Rivavan says, because you don't want this information to fall into the hands of the Goyim, because then they can use that to go and dig up the Aron. Also because it was not time yet. Other Mephoshim say it's not time yet. Min HaShemayim, for them to know where the Aron is until Moshiach comes. So now they know b'yichud, they knew clearly that is where the Oren is hidden, and therefore that's why Ram Gamliel and Ram Chanan Yiskana Koyanim's family would bow over there. The word b'yichud over here, so one meaning of yichud, and we see the meaning of yichud over here means clearly. There's a hayom yom that mentions that the chassidim of the Alter Rebbe used to explain that the word yichidus, when you talk about going yichidus to the Rebbe, it has three meanings, and one of them is clear, because when you go to yichidus, you get a clear path in what you're supposed to be doing in avoda. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tony, we learn in a Braisa, Hashofris alalu akumiso. You these shofris, these pushkas were curved, soris milamailo and rochavis milamata. They were narrow up above and they were wide at the bottom, so they were shaped like a shofar. Because of cheaters, because otherwise people might stick in their hand to take money. So like this, because they're curved and because they're narrower on top, they're not going to be able to do that. Okay, we said in the Mishnah about where the Orin is hidden away. So the Gemara brings a few different opinions about it. You also have this Gemara more or less the same. We're going to have in the Bavli and Yuma, so we'll have it in a couple of months' time. Bez Hashem. Tony b'shem Rebbe Eliezer. We learned a Braisa in the name of Rebbe Eliezer. Ha Orin Gola Yiman LeBavel. The Orin went with the Jewish people in Golos to Bavel, just like all the other Kalim of the Beis Mikdash. My time. Where does Rebbe Eliezer get that from? Because in a Nevuah that Yeshaya says to Chizkiah, he tells him Lo Yivoso Davar Amar Hashem. Not a single thing will be left over, says Hashem. And in Davar El Shad Dibris L'Seicher. The word Davar means the Luchos that means the Orin, which has the Luchos with the Aseres Adibris in it. In fact, actually, the Medrash says that when what happened was you had messengers, the Pasuk tells us, messengers came from Bavel, from King Merodach Baladan, to see Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu showed him all the treasures in his kingdom, including the Medrash says he opened up the Oren and showed them the Luchas inside. So therefore, Yeshaya comes and tells him that now everything that you showed them one day is going to fall into their hands. So that's one opinion. And v'cheinu oimer, and you have another posik also tells us that the Oren was taken to Babel. It says v'lishruvas hashana, when the year came back, in other words, exactly a year later, shalach hamelach Nebuchadnezzar, the king Nebuchadnezzar sent soldiers v'ayvi'ehu bavela, and he brought him Yechoniah to Babel. Actually, it wasn't L'shuvas Hashanah, doesn't actually mean a year later, because Yechoniah was king for only 3 months, whatever, it means at the beginning of the new year, whatever. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar sent soldiers and arrested Yechoniah by V'ehu Bavela and brought him to Bavel, im klei chemdas beis Hashem, with the precious kelim of the house of Hashem, ezehu klei chemdas beis Hashem. What does that precious keli of the house of Hashem mean? Zeha Oren means the Oren, which has the luchas inside, especially because the Torah itself is called klei chemda, like we have in Pirkei Avos, chaviv in Yisrael, shenitan lehem klei chemda. Next, Tony Rabbi Yehuda Bariloi, or Rabbi Shimon Lakish Omer, Bimkoima Haya Ha'oren Nignas. Note, the Oren was not taken to Babel, it was hidden in its place under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Hadahu Dichtiv, this is what the Pasuk means, Vayarichu Abadim, when they brought the Oren into the Kodesh HaKadoshim in Shlomo HaMelech's times, the poles of the Oren became long. The ends of the poles were visible from the Kodesh in front of the Dvir. The Dvir is the separating wall, which there was a wall and there was a doorway in the middle of it with a pareches, so the Badim could be seen in front of the Dvir. But they could not be seen on the outside. So Gemara says, what do you mean? What does it mean? Were they seen or were they not seen? First it says, vayero, then it says, velo yero. Elanirin velo nirin means they could be seen, but they couldn't be seen. Built in v'yotzin k'shne dadei ha'isha. They stuck out into the curtain like the two breasts of a woman under her clothes. So they stuck out. You could see that they were there, but you couldn't see the actual ends of the poles themselves. And in fact, in Shir Ashirim, you have a pasuk Bein Shodai Yolin, where we say Hashem rests between my bosoms. That refers to how the Shekhinah was between the two poles of the Oren in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that's a second opinion. So the point is, Rish Lakish says, since the pasuk says that the pasuk continues that the Oren is there Ad Hayom Hazeh, then that means even now the Oren is buried under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Rebbe once talked about it when an idea, which is actually brought in earlier Sfarim as well, that means that's what made it possible to have the Avoda in the second Beis Mikdash. We learned a few days ago that there are certain Kalim in the Beis Mikdash where if they're not in the proper places, then the Avoda is not valid. So how was the Avoda valid in the second Beis Mikdash? So according to this explanation, the vote is, the Rebbe expands on this in a Sicha, that there were two designated places for the Oren, one in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and one under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now that it's in its designated second place under the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then it's still in a valid place for it, and therefore the Avodah is valid. Okay, so that's a second. So again, we have Rabbi Eliezer saying that it was taken to Babel, Rabbi Yehuda or Rish Lakish saying that it was taken to saying that it was hidden under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But Rabbanan Amri Belishkas Dira Eitzim Haya Oren Ganim. The Chachamim say it was hidden under the wood chamber in the Beis Mikdash, as we said in the Mishnah. And a Braisa says Ma'ase B'Koyin Echad Balmum. It happened once a Koyin Balmum. Shrei Oymer Mufatzel Eitzim Belishkas Dira Eitzim. He was standing and peeling and cutting wood in the Lishkas Dira Eitzim because he had to check. What you had to do is you had to take off the bark from the wood and check whether there are worms underneath. And then it depends. If the wood is moist, then you have to throw the whole thing away. If the wood is dry, then you can just cut out the area that has the worms and the rest is kosher. Anyway, so Melishkas Dira Eitzim, he's doing this in the chamber of the wood because the Kohen and Bali Mum can't do the Avodah. So therefore, this is what they would do instead. They would look at the wood and check whether the wood is good for the Mizbeach or not. V'ra'as Ritzpa Shimashunah Mishtanah Mechabrisel, he noticed a tile on the floor was different than the other ones. Bava Amal Chaveh, Boyer'as Ritzpa Azayis Shimashtanah Mechabrisel, he came and told another Kohen, come look at this tile on the floor that's different than the other ones. Loi Hispik Ligma Sadavar Shi He didn't manage to finish talking about it before his neshama left him. And therefore, they knew clearly that that's where the Oren is hidden, as we said in the Mishnah. Tony, Mishum Rav Hoshia, we learn in a Braisa in the name of Rav Hoshia, what happened actually was not just that he passed away, that his neshama left him. He banged on it with his hammer, and a fire came out of there and burnt him. Now, why would he be banging on it with it? Why would he be banging on it with a hammer? One explanation is, in fact, he wanted to see, is he correct? Is there, in fact, a hollow underneath there? So therefore, he's tapping it with his hammer to see if it sounds different than the rest of the floor, and therefore, fire came out of it and burnt him because nobody is supposed to know where the Oren is until Moshiach comes. Okay. Tony Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi or Ben Lakish Omar, Beis Aronis Hoyim Ahalchen Yisrael Bamidbar. There were two Aronis that went with the Jewish people in the desert. One had the Torah, meaning the luchos, the luchos inside it. The other one had the broken luchos inside of it. Because we know that there's an Oren that the Tzalal made. The Pasuk also tells us in Parashas Ekev that when Moshe went to get the second luchos, Hashem told him to make a wooden Oren. So Rabbi Yehuda is explaining over here that there were actually two Aronis. There was one that Moshe made and one that the Tzalal made. One had the whole luchos, one had the broken luchos. The one that the Torah, meaning the whole luchos with the Aseres Adibris on them, was in the oil mode all the time. Thus, the Pasuk says, by the Ma'apilim, you had after the Chet HaMeraglim, you had the people who said, you know what, we're going to go into Eretz Yisrael on our own, and Moshe tells them, don't do it. So the Pasuk says that the Oren of Hashem did not leave the Machne. So now, how is that a proof? I mean, of course, the Oren didn't go because they're going without permission of Moshe Rabbeinu and without permission from Hashem. So, in fact, Tiklan Chadatin takes out this line. Korban Eidah says, okay, what it means is, in other words, we're just expressing the idea. And we're just expressing the idea that he says actually what it was is if that Oren was supposed to go with them, then the Ma'apilim, the Pashtus, would have taken it with them when they went to war. Other Mephoshim say it's just the Gemara is using the word loy moshu mikarev machne just to mean, in other words, there's a type of Oren that never leaves the machne. The one that had the broken luchas in it, would go in and out with them, meaning when they're traveling, in each place where they're traveling, it would go in front of them, as it says in Parashas Bahaloscha, that the Oren went 3 days ahead of them, to find them a place to rest. So that would be what they would go out with them, and also whenever they went to war, it would go with them upon them. Sometimes it could be seen together with them. Sometimes it would be ahead of them, in other words, and sometimes it would be right there with them. So according to him, there were two Oronis, one that always stayed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and one that went in and out with them when they went to war. V'rabbonan amri, but the Rabbonan say, no, Oren Echad Hoya, there was only one Oren. Upam achas yotze v'mei Eli, only one time in the times of Eli did they take it out to war. V'nishba, and then it was captured by the Plishtim, as it tells in Sefer Shmuel. So the Gemara says, "Kroya Messiah lehu l'rabbanon." We have a pasuk that supports the Chachamim's idea that there was an unusual thing that they took out the golden aron, which usually they didn't, because when they took that out, the pasuk describes the Plishtim's reaction. They said, "Oy lanu, woe to us! Miyatzlenu, miyadhu elikim ha'adir ma'ela. Who will save us from this mighty God?" Meaning, "Mila d'lechamon min yamehon." Meaning that this is something they'd never seen before. Now, if there was an aron that always went with the Jewish people to war, then what are the Plishtim so taken aback by? So it must be, like the Chachamim say, that the Aron usually stayed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and this one time they brought it out. On the other hand, Kroya Messiah the Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish. On the other hand, you have a pasuk supports Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish's version that there were two Aronis, because the pasuk says later on when Shaul was king, Vayomer Shaul Achia Hagisha Aron HaElikim, Shaul tells Achia, bring over the Aron HaElikim because I want to ask the Umatumim, and asking the Umatumim is supposed to be done in front of the Aron. So now at that point in history, the Aron was in the city of Kiryas Yorim, because after the Plishtim had captured it and they had all kinds of diseases and problems and everything, they ended up returning the Aron to the Jewish people, and it was brought to Kiryas Yorim and it stayed there for 20 years. So at this point it's in Kiryas Yorim, and then bring it all the way to the battlefield, because then the word wouldn't be Hagisha, bring it closer, but rather Havia or something like that. Hagisha implies it's right there and they just need to bring it over. So he says that shows that there were two Aronis, and one of them was right there together with them in the battle. Ma avdun le'rabbanon. So how do the Chachamim answer that? They say it means Hagisha Eli Hatzit. It means that Shaul is asking not the Oren that has the luchos, the whole luchos of the broken luchos. An Oren also means a chest. They had a chest there that had the tzitz and the other big dekohone in there. Bring that over so that you, the Kohen Gadol, can put on the clothes of the Kohen Gadol and ask the Urim V'Thummim for me. Another one, Kroya Messiah Rabbi Yehuda Ben Loi, or Ben Lachish. You have another posik that seems to support Rabbi Yehuda's version that there are two Aronis, because later on you have in Shmuel Beis, you have the story over there with Uriah and David, where David wants Uriah to go home to Bathsheba in order to cover up what happened over there between him and Bathsheba. So he tells Uriah, why aren't you going home? And Uriah answers, Oren v'Yisrael v'Yehuda yoshim basukas. The Oren and Yisrael and Yehuda are all in booths and huts. In other words, we're in the middle of a war. I don't feel it's right for me to go home and be comfortable. So what do you mean the Oren is in a tent, is in a hut? Vale Oren b'tzion haya. The Oren is supposed to be in Tzion. By that time, David HaMelech had brought it to Yerushalayim and set up a tent for it. So it's there. It's not on the battlefield. So therefore, that shows, says Rabbi Yehuda, that there were two Aronis. One remained in that tent in Yerushalayim, and the other one was on the battlefield. And Uriah is saying, therefore, with that Aron being on the battlefield, then I don't feel it's right to go home and be comfortable. Ma'avdin le'rabbanon. So how do the Chachamim answer that? They say, schach shu kikirui. They mean that Uriah is saying the Aron is under a schach, which is like a roof of a house. In other words, the fact is the Aron is still inside a tent because the Beis Hamikdash hasn't been built yet. So therefore, Shadayin Lenivna, Beis Avchira, the Beis Hamikdash hasn't been built yet. So therefore, in other words, so he's saying, if it was just that the Aron is, that the Beis Hamikdash hasn't been built yet, okay, that wouldn't be a problem for me to go home and be comfortable. After all, you have a mitzvah, period, v'rivya, you have a mitzvah, a person is allowed to be comfortable. But now that we have both, there's no Beis Hamikdash yet. The Aron itself is only in a temporary location. And on top of that, the Jewish people are at war, then I want to be machmer on myself and I'm not going to go home and have relations with my wife. So therefore, so the Chachamim say that doesn't prove that there were two different Aronis. That just proves that Uriah was saying that as long as there's A, the Aron is not in the Beis Hamikdash because it hasn't been built yet, and B, the Jewish people are at war, then I don't feel it's right to go home and be comfortable and be with my wife. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more about the Aron, or actually not so much about the Aron, but about other things that went with it when the Aron was hidden away, according to the opinions that it was hidden away, what other things were hidden with it, and then we'll continue talking about related topics to that.
Yeshikayach. Thank you very much.